Allegro section from Mozart's Violin Concerto No. 3 in G major. Lara St. John was the violinist with the Knights and Eric Jacobson conducting. It's 9:25 on Classical Mornings. I'm your host, Jean Stillwell. And speaking of Lara St. John, she joins us this morning to talk about her upcoming documentary, Dear Lara. She's an acclaimed Canadian violinist and is one of the country's most internationally recognized performers. A musician with a major recording career, more than 16 albums to her name, and performances on some of the world's leading stages. She has also long been known as an independent artistic force, producing much of her own work and shaping her career on her own terms. Her latest project moves beyond the concert stage into film. It's called Dear Lara, a documentary she created, directed and produced, which recently premiered at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival, where it screened to strong audience response and was in contention for an audience award. The film receives its Canadian premiere tonight at the Isabel Botter Theatre at 93 Charles Street West in Toronto at 7 p.m., followed by a live performance and a Q&A session. Dear Lara explores her experience within the classical music world and broader questions around power, artistic culture, and personal truth. Lara St. John joins me this morning. Good morning, Lara.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
Just fine. It's the day of our Canadian premiere. So
yes, big day.
Big day.
So when you first set out to make Dear Lara, what was the central idea you felt you needed to explore through film rather than through music?
Well, I heard from so many people after I became public in 2019 about what happened to me as a child at the Curtis Institute of Music. And I mean, in the high hundreds, actually, of folks. And I just, you know, some of the stories were just so tragic and so compelling. And I thought, I can't just kind of like walk away from this. You know, I have to make these stories heard as well, you know. And I'm holding a lot that aren't heard yet. Hopefully will be someday, maybe not. And that's always up to the survivor. But I realized, well, you know, I can't just do a blog post or something. Like, it has to be something bigger, something stronger. And it's been almost 7 years beginning to end from 2019, the middle of July, and now when it's starting to premiere all over the world.
Right.
So it's been quite the journey.
I bet it has been. And this is a very different form of expression from the one most people associate with you. So what did filmmaking allow you to say or confront that music alone couldn't?
Well, I did have a great team with me, like a producer and a great editor. And I mean, I wouldn't have been able to do it all by myself. I do have to give them credit.
Right.
I think film, just the visual is so much more, first of all, I mean, you can't just sort of make a symphony about these stories and have people understand it. You know, we really need people to know what is going on and kind of the, I think there's an impression in the general public that, you know, we're all sort of prancing around playing tunes from 300 years ago, which is in classical music, which is not entirely untrue. At the same time, it's like they just don't even think that there might be a sordid underbelly to it. And there is, because it's not, and of course this happens in many professions, but it's not every profession where you have men given inordinate amounts of power and children. And, you know, when that happens, we've seen it, the Catholic Church, the Boy Scouts, all this kind of stuff, there's, bad things tend to happen. And that's not to say that there aren't fantastic conductors and concertmasters and teachers out there. Of course there are. But unfortunately, a lot of them have taken advantage of this messianic power they've been given and use it badly and abuse children and women and some men.
So the project's taken years of your life to complete, seven, in fact.
Just about seven, yeah.
Yeah. What's the process demanded of you emotionally or artistically along the way?
Well, like this year, for example, except for COVID, is probably the only year since I was four that I decided not to have a concert schedule. I can't because of the festivals. So, film festivals, unlike classical music, they let you know if you've been accepted about 7 weeks before.
Sure.
So,
sure.
You know, I couldn't just be like, oh, I can't be there for this premiere because I have a concert. So, so I've cleared that schedule this year, which is a little bit unusual for me.
Yes.
But also, you know, I scored it myself, so that was a new thing for me and very exciting. And I don't know, it feels to me that getting this film out there and getting this message out there is so much more important than playing another Mendelssohn concerto somewhere. Not that there's anything wrong with a Mendelssohn concerto, but, you know, other people do that, and I feel like I'm the only one that can really stand at the vanguard of this and really help people to talk, to come out, to heal, mm-hmm. and ideally to stop it happening, mm-hmm. because I know that it's still happening and I know where it is. And I mean, a lot of people have reached out. And the problem with classical is that it's a small profession. And if you do come out about it in your 20s or 30s, say, it's very possible that it'll be huge retribution. You'll be blacklisted. All of a sudden, you'll have no career. And you've spent your life doing all this stuff, you know, that you love. Mm-hmm. And you want to give that up just to... So I want that to be possible. I want to end the retribution and the blacklisting. And I also just want it not to happen anymore. I mean, the only way to not be hurt by this is to not have been abused. And I don't want... I think about the 13-year-olds now going into various schools, and I just think, okay, we have to make sure this doesn't happen anymore. Because, mm-hmm. and all of us, all the subjects in the film feel that way. And that's why absolutely everybody in the film uses their own voice and their own face. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Fantastic. And I think that's very important. I mean, I understand why people need to be anonymous sometimes, but we are not. We're out there. We want to help some folks.
So... the film engages with experiences of abuse and power within mm-hmm. parts of the classical music world, as you've just said.
Right.
When you were shaping that material, what was the most important to you and in how it was told?
Well, I wanted them, by them I mean the subjects, it's mm-hmm. me and seven others, to tell this story in their own words and be comfortable telling it. So at the beginning, it was just me and a couple cameras. Like, I didn't have my team and the producer and everything. So But it was just me and a couple cameras, which actually, you know, there was no lighting guy and no studio and this and that. So I think it was easier for these people to talk to me, especially the women, because they knew they were talking to somebody who knew this from the inside out.
Right.
And they knew my story. They reached out to me, right? So I had that kind of distinct advantage that I'm not, you know, a reporter trying to do a documentary and reaching out to people saying, oh, did this happen to you? No, they reached out to me. So I thought, you know, I am unique in that I'm really the only person who can do this, mm. who can get these folks to talk and get them to hopefully, you know, I really hope that this movie becomes like the little snowball that starts the avalanche, mm-hmm. that finally cleans up this profession.
I hope so too, Laura. Yeah. So after a life so deeply rooted in performance from such a young age, you started at two?
Well, two and a half, to be precise.
Oh, well then, that makes all the difference.
Well, it is a fifth of your life at that age. You
know? So how was your connection to the violin and to making music changed through this process?
I think when a lot of the people who reached out to me no longer play their instrument or they're no longer in music. That's about half of them, I think. And of that, another half probably just don't even listen to music anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think luckily for me, you know, I had already been playing for almost 12 years by the time everything went wrong with my life and my head and everything. And I think music was so already instilled that it didn't quite managed to ruin it for me.
Okay.
There's still pieces I can't play and, you know, won't even listen to ever again that come from that time. But it's kind of a hard thing. And for me, you know, you mentioned earlier that I've kind of always done things on my own terms. The violin is like, well, it is an instrument, meaning it's sort of a medium. Really,
yes.
You know, I think if I didn't,
yes.
if I didn't play that, I'd do something like sing or, you know, be a drummer or something, you know, but it, the violin itself doesn't really matter to me. Mm-hmm. It's just a medium for expression. So now that I've found a new medium and I'm able to tell other people's stories with it, I'm, it's pretty exciting, actually.
It's very exciting.
And also, film is just, it's a place where you're going to reach a lot more people than you will bringing out, you know, another CD of music probably written 300 years ago, you know? And so that's what I really want to do is get it out there to Joe and Joelle Q Public.
Gotcha, gotcha. So as you bring the work into the public space tonight at the Isabel Botter Theater, what kind of conversation are you hoping it opens up among audiences within the arts community?
Well, certainly tonight it's quite poignant because I don't know if you remember in February there was the big Toronto Star article about Luciana Lukman, who was abused at the Royal Conservatory by Boris Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And the Royal Conservatory has not done anything since then. And, you know, she reported it when she was 16 years old, and they did nothing back then either. And so we actually just this morning on the day of the Canadian premiere, we've started a petition to ask the Royal Conservatory to please do an external, transparent investigation into these historical allegations, because she's not the only one.
Right.
And they've known about it all these years and, you know, have done nothing. So all we're asking for is an investigation. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing else. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a little bit crazy that absolutely no one has reached out to her in 2.5 months. Mm. And also, I spent a lot of time finding all the board members' emails from the RCM and, you know, the upper echelon of administration and all that. And not one person even RSVP'd for tonight. So, you know, they're lost, in my opinion. But it's a little sad. That's all. You know, you can't just put your head in the sand anymore. Me, Luciana, and the people in this film are not going to let that happen on our watch anymore.
I want to thank you so much, Laura. Thank you so much for coming in. You're an incredibly courageous woman, and it's a pleasure to finally meet you in this business.
I know, it's been all these years. Met in person.
And this is a pleasure.
Oh,
I have
thank you.
The utmost respect for your journey.
Oh, thank you so much.
And Laura, Dear Laura, premieres tonight at 7 p.m. at the Isabel Botter Theater, 93 Charles Street West in Toronto, followed by a performance and audience discussion. Thanks so much for joining us, Laura.
Thank you.